who are aware of many incidents of transcendental knowledge. Maha Bhagavata. O great devotee sage, Twaya, by you, Abhitaha, described, Parokshena, figuratively, Vachasa, by words, Jivaloka Bhava Adhva, the path of material existence of the conditioned soul. Saha, that. He, indeed. Aryamanishya, by the intelligence of advanced devotees. Kalpita Vishaya, the subject matter is imagined. Na, not. Anjasa, directly. Of Yutpanaloka, of persons who are not very experienced or intelligent. Samadhigamaha, the complete understanding. Ata, therefore. Tateva, because of that. Etat, this matter. Guravagamam, which is difficult to understand. Samaveta anukalpena, by substituting the direct meaning of such incidents. Nirdishyatam, let it be described. Iti, thus. Translation, King Parikshit then told Shukadeva Goswami, my dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient. You have very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul who is compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, the intelligent man can understand that the senses of a person in the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in that forest, and one's wife and children are like jackals and other ferocious animals. Oh my God. However, it is not very easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of this story because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory. I therefore request your holiness to give the direct meaning. So you can repeat. King Parikshit then told Shukadeva Goswami, my dear Lord, O great devotee sage, you are omniscient. You have very nicely described the position of the conditioned soul who is compared to a merchant in the forest. From these instructions, intelligent men can understand that the senses of a person and the bodily conception are like rogues and thieves in the forest. And one's wife and children are like jackals and other ferocious animals. However, it is not very easy for the unintelligent to understand the purport of the story because it is difficult to extricate the exact meaning from the allegory. I therefore request your holiness to give the direct meaning. So, purport by Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. There are many stories and incidents in Srimad Bhagavatam that are described figuratively. Such allegorical descriptions may not be understood by unintelligent men, and therefore it is the duty of the student to approach a bona fide spiritual master for the direct explanation. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta purports of the fifth canto, 13th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled further talks between King Rahugana and Jatavarga. So, Rajuvacha yaha va iha bahuvira maha bhagavata tvaya bhivitaha parokshena vachasa jivaloka bhavadva sa yaraya manishaya kalpita vishayo nanjasa yutpana loka samadhika maha atha thadi vaitad durao vagamam samatve samavitanu kalpena nirdishyatam iti. So omagana timpananda shara gananjana shilakaya chakshur meditam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. So what we've just previously read here is, as Srila Prabhupada describes in his translation, an allegory. So let's try to understand what an allegory is anyway before we go on with this description. There's several words that are similar. There's similes, metaphors, and allegories. Now, a simile is something that uses another word as a description, using the word like or as or some connective word. Like that, you could say, you're like a red, red rose or something like that. My love is like a red, red rose. I don't know if you've ever heard that before. Or your face is like a lotus flower. I mean, obviously, most people's faces don't look like lotus flowers. They'd be peeling. But it's the beauty of a lotus flower. It's hard to understand that particular simile, because the beauty of a lotus flower is compared to someone's face. It's not that the face, all the different aspects of the face are the same as all the different aspects of the lotus flower, you know. In other words, you got blue and red and all those other things in your face. I mean, that would be an insult. I mean, just like you have Krishna saying to Radharani one time, your face is like the moon. And she gets very angry because she takes it in a very literal sense. She takes it that, like, the moon has spots. So she says, you think my face has spots on it? And she gets very angry and walks away. But actually, Krishna just meant your face is very beautiful. And sometimes Krishna says, you are just like many, many moons, like Chandravali. And that just gets her angry because she's here's the name of her so-called rival. Your face is like Chandravali. So anyway, so that's a simile. And a simile is a type of metaphor. There's a little English lesson here. A metaphor can either have like or as a connector, or just like a metaphor is just like a simple statement. That let's say I was going to the forest the other day, and I felt like I was going to the spiritual world, you know. So that's sort of a metaphor. And then an allegory is like an extended metaphor, like it's a whole story using, you know, figurative speech that points out some philosophical point or practical point. Like that, I mean, just like the example of that story I tell oftentimes when I was young about the frog who was king of the mud. Has anyone heard that story before? You all heard the story. The frog was actually told that you will be, this is not Prabhupada's story, this is a story I learned when I was young. The frog was actually told that whatever you see, you'll be the king of. So he asked all of his little frog buddies to make like a frog pyramid. And so they made a pyramid, you know, like 10, 9, you know, like, you understand, pyramid. And so the higher you go without the proper support from the sides, the more it becomes tipply. And so, you know, 10 or whatever, you know, 20, 19, 18, 70 is a real high pyramid. And so the frog fell over and, you know, the pyramid just started tilting, and he went over, and his face ended up in the mud, so he became king of the mud. So the moral of the story is, you know, it's a philosophical point, The moral of the story is that that if you become too proud, want too much, pride goes before the fall. I mean, that's one of the morals of that story. So that's like an allegorical story. It's not exactly a metaphor. It's an extended metaphor. Anyway, a little bit English lesson for you. So, and of course, there's the Prabhupada story. Prabhupada told many, many stories. And of course, the Prabhupada story about the frog, too. You know, the frog in the well. I mean, obviously, there was no frog who started talking to his friends after he saw the Atlantic Ocean. You know, Prabhupada told the story. This frog was in the well, then he went to the Atlantic Ocean, and he told all of his friends, I've seen the Atlantic Ocean, it's much bigger than this well. And they asked how big, and he puffed up his little chinny chin chin, and get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You know, they try to show them how big the Atlantic Ocean, and finally it burst. You know, obviously, you know, it's hard to imagine frogs talking and having a conversation like that. And it's hard to imagine a frog being able to puff up his cheek so much, or his chin, so much that it would burst. I mean, there would be a limit. I mean, you can try it, probably up here. And your cheeks, you're not going to be able to burst. I mean, maybe you can burst a few blood vessels or something like that, but it's not going to go boom! Like that. I mean, maybe you can have a heart attack. So they did. So, you know, it's not a true story. Someone who has, like, blind faith can say, well, it's a true story. There actually was a frog who did that. No, it's a story to illustrate. I mean, this in India, you have this Hitopadesh, isn't it? With all these different animal stories to illustrate different things. Like, another story is, of course, the jackal, the story I told the other day, the jackal spilled paint on himself, and everyone, all the other animals in the forest, thought he was the king, and they put him on the throne. Obviously, lions, apart from what Walt Disney has depicted, lions don't have thrones. You know, Hare Krishna, you know, it's obvious, you know, other than the Walt Disney film, the Lion King. You know, and usually, you know, lions aren't having nice conversations with the other animals. And the other animals aren't worshiping the lion, but, you know, you don't have a deal like doing Archie for the lion or anything like that. So it's obviously an allegory. You understand? It's obviously an allegory. So, you know, allegories are used all the time to teach different moral principles or spiritual principles. But it's very important to understand, first of all, whether or not it's an allegory. Secondly, what's being taught. And thirdly, how to apply it in your life. I mean, these are some things that are very difficult to understand for people who are not intelligent, especially people in Kali Yuga. And I'll give examples of things like this. So the Vedic system of understanding whether something is an allegory or not is whether or not it makes sense in the direct literal meaning. If something makes sense, I mean, it happens, like, then it's not taken as an allegory in terms of what's coming in the Vedic literatures. If something really makes sense, for example, the Lord's pastimes, that makes sense. It's not an allegory. I mean, sometimes the Mayavadis, of course, take them as allegorical stories. Or they take it as, you know, Maya manifesting itself or something like that. But it's obviously not an allegory. So, but if something doesn't make sense, then it's taken as an allegory or metaphor or simile or something like that. I mean, the typical example given when people are talking about Vedic interpretation is you say to someone, go to visit this man whose house is on the lake. You know, like, on the lake. You know, if you say, he has a lake house, usually it doesn't mean that the house is on the lake, unless, of course, you're in Thailand or some country like that, where they do have houses on the lake. But in America, it's usually, if you say, you have a lake house, you know, so-and-so is so wealthy, he has a lake house, it doesn't really mean his house is a lake or it's in the middle of the lake. It means his house is on the bank of the lake or on the water. And that's how you understand it. So the indirect interpretation is useful when the direct interpretation doesn't make sense. You understand that? So these are the rules for interpreting Vedic literatures or statements in Vedic literature. So, let's give some practical stories about this. Let's get the story about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was dealing with the Mayavadis in Benares, headed up by Prakashananda Sarasvati. What happened is that Lord Chaitanya, of course, in order to display his humility, when he walked into the assembly of the Mayavadis in Benares, he sat down at the place where they washed their feet. Now, you have to understand, in the Vedic culture, if you sit down or you have something to do with someone's feet, it's considered very impure. Like Prabhupada said, we're not supposed to use our feet for anything except for walking. Walking, I guess that's it, or putting socks on, which is part of walking. Walking or running or something like that. You know, whereas devoted, Prabhupada said, it's offensive even to start moving furniture around with your feet. And we do that in the West. Of course, we do everything with our feet, and some people even learn to eat with their feet. So Lord Chaitanya sat down in this, what's called an impure place. And he exhibited an effulgence like 10,000 times that of the sun, you know, quite bright. And the Mayavadis sat him down, and they asked Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you're supposed to be a good sannyasi, but what are you doing dancing and chanting all the time with a bunch of low-class people? And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, told them a little story. He said, my spiritual master considered me a fool, therefore he gave me this mantra, and he told me to chant, and then by chanting the mantra, I become ecstatic like a madman. And I went to my spiritual master and I said, what kind of a mantra are you giving me? I become mad, and the spiritual master said, I'm glad you, I'm ecstatic, you achieved perfection. I'm paraphrasing what the Chaitanya Charitamrita says. And then the Mayavadis asked him, why don't you study Vedanta like a regular sannyasi? And Lord Chaitanya said, I'm not really qualified to study Vedanta. So then they did ultimately have a Vedanta discussion. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu pointed out, using this principle of, and here's another big word for you, hermeneutics. Hermeneutics means when you study something, you study Shastra, precisely, how do you interpret what it says? That's what that word means, hermeneutics. Like you have a story in the Shastra, you take it as real, you take it as figurative, you take the direct and the indirect meaning. So anyway, there's actually a committee right now in the GBC, it's headed up by Ridhananda Maharaj, it's called the Hermeneutics Committee. For sure, it's called the HEC Community. Anyway, that's interesting. And there's some discussion on how to interpret things that Prabhupada has said at different times, Like when to accept something as, let's say Prabhupada's time, place, and manner instruction, just like a particular circumstance instruction, and when to accept it as something that's always true according to all places, times, and circumstances. Anyway, so that's hermeneutics. So Lord Chaitanya had a hermeneutical discussion with these Mayavadis, and basically he pointed out that basically with the rules of Vedic interpretation, you're interpreting it indirectly when the direct interpretation makes sense. And the Mayavadis admitted, yes, it makes sense and we agree with you, but because we're members of Shankara Sampradaya, as a matter of custom, we have to accept what Shankara said, but actually you're right. The direct interpretation, Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam, Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada would also, apart from that story, Prabhupada would criticize Dr. Radhakrishna's purport on the Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada didn't criticize his translations, especially this one word. Prabhupada, in fact, used Dr. Radhakrishna's Bhagavad Gita in the beginning before we had our own Bhagavad Gita. especially this one verse is very famous, Prabhupada's comment on Dr. Radhakrishnan's commentary, when Krishna says, Man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. Mama Vaishasi Sachin Tepa Dijane Priyosame. I just always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and thus you will come to me. I mean, it's a famous verse in the Gita. So Dr. Radhakrishna gave it an indirect interpretation. He said, well, Krishna is saying this, but he doesn't actually mean that. He's talking about the unborn beginningless within himself. Which is really, you know, I don't see how you can get that. But he's making it into an allegory. You know, Krishna doesn't mean himself. Krishna means the unborn beginningless. But it's obvious because Krishna is using the word man mana. I mean, fix your mind on me. Krishna would have said, you know, fix your mind on the unborn beginningless within me if Krishna wanted that. But instead, Krishna's using this personal pronoun so many times, man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. You know, the mam is used there so many times in that verse, so it's obvious to anybody who has a half brain in their head that Krishna's indicating that people should think of him. And anyway, how can you think? The indirect doesn't even make sense. How can you think of the unborn beginningless? Try it sometime. Try to think of something that's unborn and beginningless, unmanifest, without any form, without any distinguishing factor. You can't do that. Try thinking of nothing. But even when you think of nothing, there's a concept of nothing. So you're thinking of something when you're thinking of nothing, if you understand what I'm talking about. That's the Buddhist problem, that you're supposed to think of nothing or become nothing or understand everything is, nothing is real. So if nothing is real, why should I even meditate on nothing? Because nothing makes sense anyway. I mean, that's actually the Buddhist realization, I can tell you. I've had that realization. So it doesn't, the indirect, in other words, the indirect interpretation does not even make sense with Dr. Radhakrishnan's commentary. It's just some fancy, flowery words that bewilder one. And similarly, Lord Chaitanya had this whole discussion about the Vedanta Sutra with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. You know, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya wanted to teach Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Vedanta because he was concerned that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not be able to stick to his sannyas vows, being very young, you know, like 24, 25 years of age by that time. And he said, I'm going to give you reinitiation in sannyas because you were only initiated by Keshava Bharati and you didn't get enough shiksha from your guru. Little did Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya understand that Lord Chaitanya in fact initiated his guru before the guru initiated him, because he gave his guru the sannyas mantra before the guru gave him the sannyas mantra. Anyway, there's a whole story about that. So for 7 days, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was giving instructions on the Vedanta, giving his own commentary based on Shankara's commentary. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu remained silent for all those 7 days. And after that, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya says, have you understood? And Lord Chaitanya said, I didn't understand a single word you said. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, you know, why didn't you ask any questions? And Lord Chaitanya said, because I understand Vedanta. I don't understand anything you said. You're just covering. He said, you're just covering the real meaning of Vedanta. You understand? Your words are just covering the real meaning of Vedanta. So, finally, Lord Chaitanya described the meaning of Vedanta, and of course there's that famous discussion about the Atmarama verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Atmaramascha, etc. And then Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya actually surrendered to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in other words, the direct meaning, the point is, getting back to the point, the direct meaning actually is always to be accepted if it makes sense. And if it doesn't, then we don't accept the direct meaning. And in certain cases, like this story here, the forest of material enjoyment, you know, or the wife and family like jackals and rogues and thieves, you know, jackals and ferocious animals. It's not that you look at your wife and you just go, she's literally a ferocious animal. And I'll describe what is meant by that. There, that's not, you know, we don't want to create problems. So it's not that literally like that. Or other examples in the Bhagavatam are like the Paranjana story. I mean, the Paranjana, the word Paranjana basically means every man. You know, Paranjana, or the one who's in the body enjoying. You know, so it's just like, obviously, there's no one going around by the name Paranjana. And so it's an allegorical story to teach you a lesson. I mean, there's many lessons being taught in the Paranjana story, you know, how, you know, if you try to enjoy this body, ultimately it gets old on you, and the life errors, you know, the snakes, the life errors, which are actually balancing your subtle body within the body, we're actually not going to be able to defend after a while, and then time girl comes, Kalakanya, you know, understand? That's another name, one of the allegorical characters in the front of the story. Kanya means like young girl. And Kala means time, so Kala Kanya comes. And anyway, and then she's married to Yavana Raj. I mean, it's obviously an allegorical story. I'm not going to tell that whole story. That whole story right now. And then Narada Muni refuses to accept her as his wife because he wants to stay young. You know, I mean, all these different aspects of the story are obviously allegorical. So therefore we accept that as an allegorical story. And it's an important story told by Narada Muni, to King Vrajanivarya, to teach him about this material world. And the reason allegorical stories are useful many times is, first of all, people have big false egos. And if you try to tell them about themselves, like, I've experienced that many times when I give people health advice or how to change their diet or something like that. They get offended. So instead I show them a movie of someone else who's had health problems. And then they connect with themselves. Hey, it's me. Just like Narada Muni did with King Prachinibhari. He said, once upon a time, King, there was a king, like you, but it's not you. Don't worry. Basically, you know, he's saying something like that. So sometimes we have to do that with devotees. And once upon a time, I had a disciple who was like this. Don't worry, no connection with you, it's just coming to my mind right now. And then you just go through the whole thing. And then let the person make the connection themselves. Hey, maybe I was like that, or I'm like that. Okay, I gotta do something about my health. And that way you don't offend, because sometimes the direct attack, like Narada Muni, he couldn't go to the king and just tell him, hey king, you are a Maya. Because you would tell someone that directly, they immediately say, no, you're a Maya. Because I don't know if you'd say that to Narada Muni, but he just like rejects Narada Muni. So Prabhupada also said, you know, that you don't, certain times he said that your contamination is so deep you faint if I told you. You know, so or Jesus Christ said that statement, there's much that I have to tell but you can't bear to hear. So Jesus Christ told so many allegories in the Bible, isn't it? You know, or metaphors, or similes. Like it's difficult for a rich man to go to heaven is for a camel to go through an eye of a needle. That's a simile. You understand? It's difficult for a rich man. So obviously, you know, he was talking to people who were attached to money. So he was trying to scare the bejesus out. No, sorry, whatever that word. He was trying to scare them so they would understand what they have to do to take up. Let the dead bury the dead. You know. Whatever. There's so many allegories that Jesus Christ utilized in the Bible. You find spiritualists do this. Okay. So it's useful in that respect. And one final thing I wanted to speak about was where it talks about how one's wife and children like jackals and other ferocious animals, because that's like a very controversial thing. So not only, so here's the final point. Not only do we have to understand whether something's an allegory or whether it's not, what it's trying to tell us, but we have to understand how to apply it. Like if one takes this allegory, even as an allegory, to be applying to their lives, they're going to be mistreating their wives and children. You know, imagine someone goes home one day, says to his wife, you know, "You're a jackal." And says to his children, "You're just a ferocious animal." Or like a life opposite, legal thief. Why legal thief? Because if a thief robs you, you call the police. But if your family members, they rob you. I mean, just like every night, when my father got home from work, I would take his pants and take all the money out of it. And he never called the police on me. Not even once. And he knew what was happening. You know, I mean, not that I went into his wallet and took his credit cards and everything, but, you know, any loose stuff that was there. Like coins. You know, I had a whole collection. Or my parents had this, like, big piggy bank. It was about this big. It was a barrel with a slot in it. So, you ever see those? So then I developed a way, using a knife and turning it upside down, I could take everything out of it. So I was a legal thief. So how to apply this? First of all, we have to understand it doesn't apply if one's wife and children are devotees. If they're spiritualists. But if they're just interested in the material, you know, just getting more and more in the mode of passion and ignorance, yes, it applies. So also, the lessons in the metaphor may or may not apply to your particular circumstance. So that's a very important thing too. Not only do you have to understand whether it's a metaphor or allegory or it's a literal thing, but you also have to find out if it applies to you. And if it applies to you, how to apply it in your particular case. So it requires a lot of intelligence. Therefore, Prabhupada says here, is the duty of a student to approach a bona fide spiritual master for the direct explanation and also the direct application. I'm adding that. Direct application. I don't want anyone going around calling his wife jackals and you know, animals in the forest. The people should have loving relationships with their family. I make their family Krishna conscious. And that family is transcendental. One doesn't have to leave their family. I mean, just like there's injunctions, one should take sannyas at 50. But if one is serving Krishna, one can go on living with wife and family and giving up sense gratification, of course, and serving Krishna in that way to the end of this life, and then go back to Godhead. So, anyway, so there has to be an understanding how to imply injunctions, whether those injunctions come in allegories, metaphors, or similes. Okay. On that happy note, don't worry, no one's like a jackal here or a ferocious animal. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaur Premananda.